Welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show, broadcasting live from Chicago. Just love that song. That it really gets my ire up. I mean, I really love that song. The introduction of the song before I come on, it's a clip from a blues song that I just cut it up a little bit and tried to make it sound like something. I took the vocals out of it. They weren't mine, but I took them out of it. And it is such a beautiful song. It's just great. It just a great start for the show every day or every time that I'm on the air. That is a wonderful song. I just love it. I just get it. It's just like down in a groove or something. Ain't that a groove? Or, you know, back in the groove. But I just love that song. It's an introduction of introduction to the show. And speaking about show and speaking about your host, this is George Wilder Jr. And this is the George Wilder Jr. Show, broadcasting live from Chicago. Thank you so much for being with me. Thank you so much for podcasting and downloading and listening to this show. There's a lot of them out there, but, you know, you make this, you always put this one on your list, you know, because it's a great show. It's a wonderful time. It's a great show. All right. Author and success coach Deborah Riley Magnus will be on the George Wilder Jr. Show. She should be calling in a little while. And this will be her second or third time back on the show. She's always so gracious, and she's such a wonderful person and so knowledgeable in her field. And I just hope she brings along a lot of her fans. Okay? All right. This is the George Wilder Jr. of the George Wilder Jr. Show, broadcasting live from Chicago. 347-857-1762. All righty. We're broadcasting from Chicago, as I've just mentioned, and it is beautiful here. It's beautiful time. It's beautiful weather. From my understanding, it's about 85 degrees, I believe. What? Okay. All right. Okay. Thanks. I was just told it's about 82 degrees. So, you know, whatever it is, it's very nice. It is totally nice out here. And happy Friday, everyone. Happy Friday. You know, happy Friday, the 21st of August, 2015. I always try to put the date in there because I'll podcast this show, you know, two or three weeks from now. So I always try to put the date in so they don't think it's been recorded on the date that they podcasted or downloaded it. But it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. All my shows are fresh. All of them sound like they could have been recorded or done live right there on the spot. And that's a great thing. That's a great thing. It's George Wilder Jr. of the George Wilder Jr. Show. Okay, let's get right into it. We're going to talk about some things in the news until my guest calls in. And this is always a segment. I always have this segment, Things in the News, okay? And I want to talk about something that I've talked about yesterday, and that is this lousy governor. I mean, some people feel that he's done something positive today. And what he did positive, let me see if I can go back and find it. Okay, Rauner returns. Rauner over. Rauner on Union Override. Let me do my job. Let me see. Listen to the editor. It's something. Let me see if I can go back and find out, because a lot of people are saying something nice about him, but that doesn't mean they like him, you know, because he's an awful governor. He was He arrived in his motorcycle and greeted supporters during a governor's rally. I think it was about 2 or 3 days ago. And this was in Springfield, Illinois. And the first thing that comes out of his mouth is that he's glad to be a Republican. He's glad to be a Republican. Now, how can anybody with any sense, any brains, say to people that I'm glad to be a Republican? Oh, you got me. I mean, you really got me on that one. But, you know, that's what he said. I mean, it's his quote. You know, then that's good for him. Because his approval rating is 36% in this state, or even it could be lower. It could be lower. And how can you be glad to be a Republican when nobody likes you? Nobody approves of you. Nobody agrees with the way you are doing your job. And he went on to say something like, you know, he's going to make. Now, this is the kicker. Governor Bruce Rauner of Illinois at the Governor's Day rally about a couple of days ago in Springfield, and I quote, this guy said that he's going to make this entire state of Illinois, he's going to turn it into a Republican state. It is now a Democratic state, and he says unequivocally that he's going to turn this into a Republican state. He's already trying to unseat Michael Madigan and Cullerton, the legislature in Illinois. He's trying to unseat them. He's serious about turning this state into a Republican state, but I don't think he's going to succeed because the guys he's talking about throwing out, they are more powerful than he is. They've been in politics a lot longer than he has. He's a rookie. He is a total rookie. He doesn't even know. I admit Bruce Rauner is a good talker. He is a great speaker. He could be a radio host, but he's an awful governor. He could be anything he wants to be. He's a great talker, but he is an awful governor. Okay? He is awful. Okay, because now he's trying to unseat some people in the legislature so the Republicans can take over and just ramrod everything that they can against the people of this state. That is so wrong. But what can you say? He's proud to be a Republican. He's proud to be our partner. That's what he said. Well, get this, Bruce Rauner. We're not proud of you. We want you out of this state. We don't think you know how to govern. We don't think you know how to be a leader. You know how to cut. You know how to piss people off. You know how to be mean and nasty, but you do not know how to govern. Okay? All right, here's some adjectives. Let me see if I can find those adjectives. I wrote them down somewhere. Okay, here they are. This guy is corrupt. There's no doubt about it because he's taking money from needed programs, funding from needed programs that poor people and middle-class people and people who are struggling need so much, so badly. He's taking that money and he's giving that money to his staff, paying his staff with money that's coming from strap programs instead of paying them out of the governor's budget. That shows you right there that he doesn't know anything about governing. You don't take money from cash-strapped programs, vital programs that are helping people and paying your staff with. You have a governor's budget where you do that. But like I just said, he doesn't know anything about government. You know, and he doesn't want his staff speaking in front of Mike Madigan, trying to inform him why are they doing the things that they're doing. Obviously, some of the things they're doing are not criminal, but some of the things that they're doing could be designed as corrupt. I honestly believe he's a corrupt governor. I said this before, and I will say this again. They're going to be taking this guy out in handcuffs. And he's talking about making this state a Republican state in 8 years. In 8 years, he will not be here. If I had my way, he wouldn't be here the next 8 minutes. He's saying in 8 years. Obviously, he doesn't believe that he can do this. It's going to take him 8 years to do this. Well, obviously, his power or his reach doesn't reach that far. If it's going to take him 8 years to turn this state into a Republican state, which I doubt that. That will never happen, Bruce Rauner. You will never turn a Democratic this state into an all-Republican state. It's not going to happen because people don't like you. And that's evidenced by your poll numbers. And everybody who's anybody that's all over this state is questioning Bruce Rauner, whether they're poor, struggling poor, the middle class, the working poor. Everybody has something negative to say about this guy. And he's talking about what? Making this state a Republican state? All Republicans? And if that happens, let's assume that that might happen. Then we're all through. You know, I mean, there won't be any funding for nothing. Every strap program there is, he's going to take every cent out of these programs and give it to those who have supported him. And those who have not supported him, he's going to get rid of them. It's always payback with Bruce Rauner. If you're for him, you're helping him out, hey, you got a job. You're talking against him, hey, you are out of a job. And that's the way it is. He claims he loves this state. He claims he wants to help people to keep their funding. Yeah, he wants to help you keep your funding as long as he gets what he wants. Actually, the guy is right now, he's holding this state hostage. You know, he's holding it hostage so the legislature can give him what he wants. What he's doing, he's preying on the caring process that liberals and progressives have. He knows that we are caring people, and he knows that Republicans are not caring. So he's going to hold those people, those vulnerable people, hostage until he gets what he wants. So if he gets what he wants, which is the bus union, get rid of workman's comp, so on and so forth. But the thing is, the thing that he wants, they're not a part of the budget. Illinois still, and I keep harping on this every day, this is probably the eighth or ninth week that we have not had a budget. And that's a shame. Even some of the Republicans are telling Rauner to get his act together and get a budget. We have never been like this before. This has never happened before until this clown bought the office of governor. And now he wants to ruin this state. Rauner wants to see strikes. He wants to see chaos in the streets. He doesn't care. He doesn't care about you dropping dead in the middle of the street because he has halted funding for the burial service for the injured. He doesn't care. He doesn't care if your sewer line has stopped because the food deliveries from the state has stopped because of lack of funds. He doesn't care if you eat, sleep, walk, die. He doesn't care. And the thing about it, he's hiring people left and right, especially people who have supposedly helped his campaign. Now, that's cronyism. And he ran on getting cronyism out of government. And he's the main crony guy. This guy is so phony, it's a shame. He's mean, he's vindictive, he's nasty. I mean, what can I say? He's trying to pick a fight with Speaker of the House in Illinois, Mike Madigan. I mean, by his words and by his quotes and the things that he said. Okay. All right. He's saying that he spoke to as protesters affiliated with the Service Employees International, rallied across the street. Yeah, they were rallying across. I mean, everywhere Bruce Rauner goes, there's always going to be somebody there to try to take him down. But he's going to pretend like he doesn't hear. He's going to pretend like he doesn't see. And he's going to continue to be the type of person that he is. Okay. I'm quoting, I hope they're going to do the same to Speaker Madigan. Madigan refuses refusal to get a budget. Madigan hasn't refused a budget. Madigan has put two or three budgets on this guy's desk, and he just let them die there. He must be talking about a budget that including his turnaround government, his turnaround agenda, which has nothing to do with the government, with the budget. His turnaround agenda has nothing to do with the budget. That's why we haven't got a budget. He wants to bust unions. He wants to hurt people. He wants to do more cuts. That's his turnaround agenda. He wants to hurt more people. He wants to hurt children. He wants to hurt the elderly. He wants to hurt seniors. That's his turnaround agenda. And the people who he's hiring or has hired, they're there for one purpose, to try to cut the budget, save money in some kind of way. But he's forgetting, like so many other Republican governors forget, when you are in office, whether a person voted for you or not, you are there to serve everybody. You are a servant. You are not a king. You are not a dictator. You are a servant of the people. But so many Republicans and Democrats forget that. They think because they've been voted into office that, you know, that they're the ones you should listen to. They're the ones who have, they are the ones who have all the answers, and they do not. They do not have all the answers. We the people have the answers. We voted for you. We're paying your salary through our taxes. Government for the people and by the people. But these guys forget that, especially Republicans. Especially Republicans. Okay, and this is one thing that I hated to hear Rauner say on the Governor's Day. And I quote, this is in print. And the governor, he had a clear message for the powerful speaker, who is Mike Madigan of the Illinois House in the legislature. Okay, he says, I'm festy. I'm a festy guy. Those are his words. And he goes on, you mess with my home, Speaker Madigan, you mess with home, you pick the fight with the wrong guy. And people cheered. I mean, he said that as if he wanted to actually go fist bumping with this guy. He said it as if he wanted to actually get Madigan in a ring, a boxing ring, and just take him out. This is the governor of Illinois talking to the Speaker of the House. This is the governor talking like a bully, and Madigan is the guy he's picking on, because he's actually picking on Madigan because he's been jumping in Madigan's ass since day one. And the only reason why he's jumping on Madigan and Cullerton, they have the power that he wants. They can override anything that he tries to do if they have the votes. And he knows it. Rauner can talk a good game, but on certain issues, he has to work with the legislature. Now, he can sign all the things that he wants into office through his executive authority. And he's been doing that. He's been using his executive authority to get things passed like I've never seen a politician before do. I used to wonder why Obama didn't use his executive authority like that. Obama, he can't use it. I mean, he got to have compromise, you know, but not Bruce Rauner. Bruce Rauner doesn't want compromise. He's going to sign what he's going to sign. But no matter how much he signed into office, no matter how many executive orders he gives or laws he signed without input from the legislature, to me, he's still not doing his job. He's not doing his job because we do not have a budget in the state of Illinois. The only thing he's doing is just taking his pen and signing stuff into law using his executive powers. Something, like I said before, something Obama would do or should have done a long time ago, but he wants compromise and, you know, he's not going to do anything without compromise. I mean, we gave Obama this power and he just doesn't use it. All right, this is George Wilder Jr. of the George Wilder Jr. Show. I'm going to take a break right here. Stay with me. I will be right back. Let's see if I can't cue up something here. All right, here we go. I'll be right back. Stay with me. You are now listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio. Yeah, we're back. We are back. All righty, let me see if we can't hook this up. All right, here we go. Hey, friends and fans, this is George Wilder Jr. of the George Wilder Jr. Show. You know, it costs a lot to keep this show airing. It takes time, preparation, and dedication, and most of all, it takes revenue. If you would like to donate to keep this show on the air each and every day, just about, go to www.georgewilderjr.com. That's www.georgewilderjr.com to help keep this important show on the air. Donate for a good cause. The cause of this show, my show, your show. This is the talk of our time. Thank you very much.
The hardest working man in internet radio is my father, George Wilder Jr., and here he is.
Here he is. All right, thank you for that. We're back, and we're recording and broadcasting from lovely, beautiful Chicago. We have crime. This city is crime, but it's a beautiful, beautiful city. You know, we're not the number one crime center of the world. No way. I don't even think we're in the top 10. Yeah, we have crime. Yeah, we got to get rid of the gangbangers, the thugs, the illegals who are here causing problems, of course. But like this city, like so many cities, this is a sanctuary city. I mean, we have people who are illegals walking around here like they, you know, we're born here, you know, because they can't be touched, because this is a sanctuary city, just like San Francisco. I believe California is a sanctuary city where illegals can walk around without being molested, you know. So, but Chicago is a beautiful city. It's a beautiful town. It's a wonderful place to live. We have crime, yeah, but not as bad as some other places, you know, because if I had a magic wand and I could just, you know, wave it and just say crime go away, I would do that. That'll never happen. I wish it would happen, but it won't happen. It's a beautiful city. It's a beautiful time, a beautiful town. So don't let people scare you about Chicago's crime. Okay? Don't let people scare you. Don't run away thinking that that's going to save your life. Because you never know, crime could follow you. You never know, you know. But Chicago is a beautiful city, a beautiful town, and a great place to live, okay? And I think every place you go or every place you can visit, there's always that part of town that might be the poor part of town, or the part of town where there might be crime, you know. Because wherever there's poverty, there's crime. You know, just like wherever there's doo-doo, there's flies. You know, so Chicago is a beautiful town. And I'm pretty sure there's a lot of people out here that agree with me. And I don't think Chicago should be labeled Chirac in some movie. I haven't seen the movie. I can't criticize the movie. Only thing I can criticize is its name. I think I would probably be criticizing the name, even if I didn't live in Chicago. That's an awful name to compare a beautiful city like this to some rogue-ass town in Iraq, or just Iraq in general. I think that's totally unfair. I mean, Spike Lee doesn't live in Chicago. He doesn't give a damn. He's thinking about having a hit movie. You know, he loves the exposure. He loves the attention. He loves the publicity. This is great marketing for him, you know. But for everybody else who lives in the city, it's a downer, you know. Let's say if the movie's a hit. Let's say if it's a hit. And it might be. It probably will be a hit because of all the publicity it has gotten so far, whether positively or negative. It has gotten a lot of publicity all across the United States. So it could be a hit movie. And if it's a hit movie, then the name Chirac is going to stick with Chicago. And that's totally, totally unfair. And that's totally, totally not a right thing for this beautiful city. And remember to take my word for it, because I've been living here just about all my life. This is a beautiful town, beautiful city, wonderful people. Things happen. Yeah, things happen all over. Crime is everywhere. You know, so if you're trying to run from crime, you just might be walking into it. You never know. You know, so I always try to tell people, do not run from where you live because of crime. Stay there and fight it and try to eradicate it. That's your town. That's your community. That's your neighborhood. That's the place where you grew up. That's the place where you love and you want to stay there. Don't let the bad element come in there and run you away. Because if you do that, then the bad guys win. The bad guys win. And they're laughing at you. Oh, we ran them away. They're gone. Let's take it over now. You have to stick and fight. I'm not saying stay in a bad neighborhood or a crime-ridden neighborhood and get shot and killed. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying fight for what you love. Fight for what is yours. If you feel like you've got to run and try to seek a better place, a safer place, then by no means do it. If you feel that you want to. But my thing is, if you like where you're staying and you like your neighborhood, you like your neighbors and all that kind of thing, and everything is cool, stay there and fight. You and your neighbors, your friends, and everyone get together and run the bad guys out of your neighborhood, out of your community, out of your city, out of your country. It takes you. It takes you. It doesn't take the police, because we know that the first thing they're going to do is shoot first and ask questions later. We know that. We've seen that too many times. That's what's going to happen. But if you love your community, you love where you are, you love your town, you love your neighbors, fight for what you want. Don't let the bad guys run you out. You run them out. You live there. They don't come there to terrorize, to beat up, murder, rob, steal. They come there for those kinds of things. And that's your neighborhood. That's your community. Stand up and fight for it. You and your neighbors get together, and your clergymen y'all get together and run them scoundrels out of your neighborhood, out of your community, out of your state, out of your country. All right, this is George Wilder Jr. of the George Wilder Jr. Show. Thank you for joining me. Thank you for being here. Oh, it's just a lovely time, a lovely day. I want to say once again, happy Friday to everyone. Happy Friday out there, all right? Okay, I'm looking at Obama First Lady Michelle, the First Lady of the United States. She's saying she's not coming back to Chicago to live. Now, I could speculate a lot about that. I didn't think they were going to come back. I actually didn't. I mean, I've heard 6 or 7 or 8 months ago that they were not going to come back to Chicago. Obama and Michelle and all of them, they're originally from Chicago. They originally are from Hyde Park, a community, a high-class community based in Chicago. And they've always been Chicagoans. But all of a sudden, they got a taste of the White House. They got a taste of being rich, and now they don't want to come back to Chicago. It could be the crime. It could be that they're just scared and and cowardly and decided that they don't want to come back to Chicago. I was surprised when I heard that about 6 or 7, 8 months ago that they were not coming back to Chicago to live and that they were probably preferring on staying in New York City or preferring on Hawaii and not Chicago. And a lot of us were surprised at that. And but, I mean, wherever she wants to go, wherever her and Obama, her husband and her family, her two girls, wherever they want to live, that's up to them. I mean, Chicagoans are going to be totally, totally disappointed that the Obamas didn't want to come back and live in Chicago, a place to where they started from. It's just obvious that that Wall Street, the corporations, the big money guys probably had an influence on that. Excuse me. So we'll just have to deal with that. And that's just going to have to, we're just going to have to do without them and just wish them the best. Because in 2016, we're going to have a new president. I'm going to take a break right here. I will be right back. All right, taking a break. All right, we're back. I had to get a gulp of water. I had to get some water. Something got in my throat there, you know. So, all right, here we go. Deborah, you there?
I am here.
Okay. How's it going?
It's going well. How are you?
I'm fine. I'm just having fun, actually. I'm in my studio in Chicago, and I'm near the window here, and I have the whole Broadway, the street is out there in front of me, and the weather is just acting so cooperative for, you know, and it is just wonderful. It's fun. It's just awesome. I believe it's around 85 degrees here, and it is just beautiful, and somehow it's just radiating all over me for some reason.
Well, I am sitting in my home office overlooking the city of Pittsburgh and PNC Park.
Oh, wow.
Where, you know, we're currently playing San Francisco. So if you hear noise, they shoot off fireworks every now and then. So.
Well, they can shoot them off all they want to, as long as they don't shoot them in my direction, I would think, you know. So, okay.
Ladies and gentlemen,
this is Deborah Riley Magnus. She is the author of Right Brain, Left Brain, Bridging the Gap Between Creative Writer and the Marketing Author. All right, welcome back to the show, Deb.
Oh, I'm so glad to be here.
All right, right brain, left brain, that's right with a W.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, all right, we can get started. What do you mean by right brain, left brain? In your own words.
Well,
of course.
I spent a lot of time with authors, obviously, and mm-hmm. I'm an author success coach, so I teach authors how to market, and that's the scariest thing on the planet for them. They're terrified. They do the wrong things because they don't know anything else to do. So consequently, what I keep hearing when I sit down with authors teaching, you know, boot camps or speaking at conferences or even just in meeting groups, I hear the same thing. I'm creative. Marketing is not. And that's totally not true. You know, just because you're a writer means you're even more creative. And the fact mm-hmm. of the matter is, if you are as creative as you really are, you've already built everything you need to market well right there in your story. And mm-hmm. it just blows the mind. They don't understand. Do you mean I don't have to give away free books or do what everybody else is doing? No, you don't do anything anybody else is doing. But right mm-hmm. brain, left brain is all about just connecting it, creating that bridge, and explaining that not only is marketing creative, but it's creative based on what you already created and love. So it's a pathway to success.
Yeah. You might be right about that, because I have, you know, I have a radio show, and a lot of times I'll have authors on the show, or I'll ask authors to be on the show, and then some authors will say they don't want to be on the show because they don't want to talk about their book. And I always say, you have a book out there, you have a book on Amazon or Barnes and Noble, and you don't want to market it, you don't want to give it any publicity, you don't want to talk about it. Why are you a writer? Why are you an yeah. author? You know, I mean,
well,
because if you don't... Go ahead.
It isn't that they don't want to talk about it. They don't know how, and they're scared. You know, they're afraid of it.
That's my point. If you don't know how to market, if you don't want to market, if you're afraid of marketing, why are you... It's like a waste of time to write. Because if you
yes.
don't market or let other people know about your book, it's just going to sit there, no matter how good it is,
yeah.
how well it's written. If you don't tell somebody that it's there, even just for them to go by and just look at it, it's going to sit there and it's going to, you know, I mean, it's just going to be a waste of time, I think.
It is. It is
but
absolutely
I've had
the truth. And
you know. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Okay.
I'm
right.
sorry.
That,
go ahead.
So you agree with that? You agree with that?
Oh, I live it every day. I mean, there's not a day that doesn't go by when I don't have some sort of argument or dilemma or issue with an author, because, you know, authors hire me to coach them. And coaching uh-huh. them means I'm just showing you the way. I'm teaching you the techniques. You need to do them. And they'll still come back and say, oh, I'm not going to do that because my author friends don't do that. I'm not going to do this because I'm not good like that. I don't want to speak. I don't want to do this. I don't want to go there. And it's kind of a sad, sad story, because you put together this beautiful story, you know, and
yeah.
you don't do
yeah.
anything, you know,
yeah.
and it isn't a matter of just doing anything. I mean, you and I are in the same kind of environment on Facebook, for example. You're going to agree with me. What do authors do? They all clump together. They all try to sell their books to each other. They forget that, you know, another author is too busy trying to sell their book to buy your book. You know, all the authors clump together and they do the same kinds of promotions, and they're all shouting at genre lovers, and they're all shouting at bookstores, and they're all shouting at book clubs, and they're not going any further, and they're all upset because we're not selling enough books. Well, you have to kind of step away from all the other authors, because that's your competition. I mean,
right,
Hershey's
right. I was just
doesn't
thinking.
Yeah. Hershey's doesn't get on yeah. Twitter and hang out with Mars Candy and share marketing ideas. And neither should authors. You know? But you have
so
to go into your own book and I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. No, that's one of, you're right. Some authors, a lot of authors, want to try to sell their book to other authors, and they're forgetting that there's a lot of competition out there. You know, you shouldn't just try to sell your book to one group of people. I mean, try to sell it to as many people as you think that might be interested in that subject.
Well, it goes deeper than that. There's a little magic in this concept. Okay. And marketing has been around since, oh, I don't know, since they stuck up posters for gladiator fights, you know? Marketing has been around forever. And what the trick to marketing is connecting with people who will love the things that are in your book. You know, I have an author that I worked with a few years ago, and I coached her. And basically, she had a book that it was a murder mystery, and it took place. It surrounded the cupcakes, which was very popular a few years back. And basically, I said to her, you know, you've got the main character bakes cupcakes. She bakes them when she's nervous. She bakes them to figure out the dilemma. She bakes them and eats them. She is trying to solve the problem. I says, your key here is cupcakes. Everybody who loves cupcakes is going to get a kick out of this book because it's really a sweet book. It's called Cupcakes, Lies, and Dead Guys. It was a really, really sweet little murder mystery. And by explaining to her, stop going and chasing after mystery groups. Start going after groups of people who love cupcakes. You know, look for them on Facebook. Look for them on Twitter. She started doing, you know, book signings at cupcake stores in her neighborhood. She started connecting online with companies that sell cupcakes, you know, and doing little situations where she would write a little piece for their website and expose herself to all of their audience that loves cupcakes. Now, cupcakes is not obviously everybody's unique hook, you know, but it's what we need to start thinking about, you know. My fiction, we had talked about it last time, is about vampires. And the easiest way for me to connect with people is to do something that really gets the point across. So one of the things I'm trying to set up is a blood drive across the country in, you know, later in the fall. A blood drive, yes. Sponsored
all right.
by the
blood.
Twice Fake Vampire series.
All right. Okay. You may have already answered this, but I'm going to try it again.
Okay.
Why are authors so afraid of advertising their book?
Because they don't know how. You know, they feel it, that seems to be the biggest answer. They're terrified. And if they don't know how, they don't want to make a fool of themselves. And they don't understand that, you know, there is a simple trick, and they don't want to try that simple trick because it might be scary or it might be embarrassing or it might not get them what they think they want. So there's a whole lot of reasons, but that's what I found out is the biggest.
You're afraid. Okay. Do you think that authors... Okay, let's get past that one. Do you think that authors... need book reviews?
You know, book reviews are nice. Everybody loves book reviews, you know. I'm not a big one for paying for a book review. I believe and truly believe that there are so many things that you can do to market your book without spending a nickel that, you know, why would you pay for a book review?
I would never pay for a book review. Some people have accosted me into trying to pay for a book review. I would never ever pay for a book review. I've given book reviews myself, and I haven't asked for a dime. I've given a lot, quite a few, and I haven't asked for a dime. Most of the reviews that I've given have been, you know, 4 or 5 star reviews. And I haven't got asked for a dime. And now I have books and essays and short stories up on Amazon, and some of them I don't have one single review. However, the books, that particular book that has no reviews, none whatsoever. That book has sold immensely without one review.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. This book is that way. Right brain, left brain is that way. I think people don't know how to review it. They test it. They try to figure it out. They it's hard. Sometimes with fiction, especially genre fiction, it's a whole lot of fun to get reviews. And I have an entire system that I use where, you know, a month before I contact all of the, you know, legitimate review bloggers, and you know, and I let them all know the book is coming out. I let them all know. I give them a copy of the cover, and I give them the, you know, the ebook format and file, and then they know when it's coming out. And a lot of them will do a review, and those reviewers will also post it on Amazon. But I'm not sure how that changes things. You know, I find that getting reviews, it's an effort, but you still have to let people know about the book. Otherwise, they won't go and look at it and see the reviews that you worked so hard to get.
Exactly. You know, I'm saying this particular book doesn't have any reviews, but I will always welcome reviews, you know. And, you know, but I'm not really hard up for any reviews. I love them. I'm always asking for them. And I'm pretty sure any author would, if they want to try to get the word out about their book, you would do that. But, you know, I'm not hard up for them or anything. But I think reviews do help to sell your work, no doubt about it. And I would never tell anyone, don't worry about a review. Because you're right about one thing. Some people don't know how to write a review. They've written a whole book, but they can't write a review.
Yeah. And you know what? You really want the reviews from non-authors. You want the reviews from people who read, who don't know how to write a review because they're just so excited. This is such a cool book, you know. Those are the people that you want. You want to capture that excitement, and you want to get that kind of activity going. And that's always, it's always fun, and it's always, but it's something you have to do. You know, everything needs to be timed. I hear that all the time. Oh, there's no time. If I market, I have no time to write my book. And that's kind of like, well, that's silly. You know, don't waste your time socializing on social networking. You know. Mm-hmm. Market.
Yeah.
Use it for what it's meant to be used for, and then you have the time.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, why do you believe that offering a book for free will generate sales?
I don't believe in free giveaways at all. I never did. It's one of those
things. I think I read something about
Let me ask you a question. The question is really simple. When you get something for free, what's the value of that thing? What's the perceived value of something given to you for free? You know, found that, it's just, it doesn't have a whole lot of value in your head. You know, what is the value of free? You know, I believe in discounting books. I believe in having special events. And, you know, things like that, I have no problems with those. But I'm not a big one for giving away free books at all.
The reason why I asked you the question,
I do give
because
them to
I
reviewers.
Saw it in your book.
I didn't say I give away free. I never suggested giving away free books.
No. I just saw that and just generated a question out of that.
Yeah, because I never suggest doing it. You know, we worked hard for this. You know, I think that one of the most dubious honors in the world is that person out there who, wow, I am number one in the free books. You know, and I'm like, okay, you gave away 1,000 free books. Why?
Yeah.
You know,
how
great is that?
You know, I kind of agree with you. On this is the way I agree with you. I mean, you put so much into that book, writing it, editing, drafting it, you know, and all of that kind of stuff. And it's a great book. It's a great story. I mean, it's out there. Great cover, prologue and all that stuff. Why? And it was hard work. You don't want to give your I mean, it's worth something. You don't want to sell it, you know, give it away for free.
Yeah.
You know,
well,
I have
been
told to give
it's perceived value. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
it's perceived value. I mean, I remember my grandmother saying, "It's free. You don't want that." You know.
You know, I don't even like selling a short story. I don't even like selling a short story for 99 cents. You know.
Well, you know, sometimes if they're short, okay. And what is the story about, and what are you trying to accomplish with it? You know, sometimes it's a good idea.
Yeah.
But giving away your soul?
Yeah. Yeah, I've got a couple of short stories for 99 cents. I said I don't like it, but it's something that I do because they were a lot more than that, but I dropped the price on them. You know, but I would never give them away for free.
Yeah.
And then there's people who will say, ask me for a review, and they're giving away a free book, and none of my books are free, so I say, you know, I don't have a free book to review, to swap with you, and they say, okay, all right. You know, so.
Well, yeah, you know, and it's hard. It's hard. You want to be, I try to keep a limit on what I do give away. I give away only to reviewers. That's all I ever give away to. You know, I might give away when I'm doing a speaking engagement. For example, if I have just recently did a boot camp, which was like two solid Sundays, weeks, long days, that kind of stuff. But the woman who put it together had worked so hard to get this thing together. I made a gift of one. But that's not giving away a free book. You know, that's thanking somebody with what I feel has a lot of value.
Yeah. Do you think that being an avid reader can help a writer to be a better author?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You know, there's a lot of people who, I'm an author, I am great, I'm this, I'm that, I'm published. But the bottom line is, are you telling the best story you can? I mean, I'm facing that situation, a little dilemma right now myself, because, I mean, I write, I'm an author, and I'm an author success coach. I teach all these workshops. I'm always, you know, bustling around, doing all this stuff, going a little nuts. And then I turn around, and it's like, wow, there's a story in my head I've been dying to write, and I haven't written it. And I know that there is a point where you have to say, I want to be a better writer. I want to be a really good writer. I think I'm a good writer, but I want to be a really good writer. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I want to take a year and give it everything. And that's where I am right now. You know, personally.
Yeah.
So it's interesting that you'd ask that question right now, because it's a hard decision to say, okay, I'm going to back off on a lot of things for a while and just focus on this. So I want to write the best book I ever wrote in my life. So,
I don't think you can be an author if you're not a reader or an avid reader. I think they both go hand in hand. You have to read, because, you know, it's just, I don't know, it's the law of being an author, maybe. Okay, do you believe...
You have to read well.
You
have to read well. You have to read well. You have to read good books. You know, that's the real point, you know. And to write well, you have to read well. To design well, you have to write. You have to look at good design. It's the same way with everything.
Uh-huh. Do you believe that writers, actually, do you believe that authors are leaders?
I believe authors should be leaders. I think authors are usually too afraid to do it. I think an author that says, my favorite is, I hate marketing, it's evil. I mean, how is marketing evil? I don't understand, you know. I think it's like watching, I think we're both baseball fans, right? You and I? Okay.
Yeah, I'm
it's like watching a baseball
Chicago
game.
Cubs.
Something upsets me when a ball player is frustrated with themselves, so they go and they throw this bat and this bull, and they just have this hissy fit, this childish, unprofessional. I mean, to me, that's where the issue comes in. Authors need to take it as a profession, because it is a profession.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
we work hard at this, you know. So I think that would be the biggest problem that I have, because I think authors have to be leaders. They have to stand up and say, you know what, marketing is important and I'm going to learn it. You know what, writing well is important, so I'm going to really read well. I'm going to pay attention to things. I'm going to watch trend, because if I want HarperCollins to publish me one day, I need to know what they're publishing, rather than I hear a lot of, oh, I don't care about them. You know, well, nobody said you have to publish with them, but you do have to know what's going on in the world, you know. So.
You have a nice cover on that book. Did you have much input in the cover design?
I got lucky. Motivational Press is a wonderful publishing company, and they, you know, they had asked me what I wanted on the cover, and I was being very subtle because I didn't want to be picky about it. I have two previous books that have been published, and they actually went and looked at those and managed to make this cover fit that series idea, because the first book is called Finding Author Success. The second book is Cross-Marketing Magic for Authors. And then this book is Right Brain, Left Brain. But this book was with a new publisher, and I thought, oh, I don't want to tell them to match it, so I'm just going to be good and quiet. And they did. And it's a great cover.
Yeah, it is a great cover.
I love it.
Eye catcher. Yeah, me too. I think it's great. I even like the thought of... you know, the right brain, left brain. I think that, I think that was terrific. You know, I'm saying, whoa, right with a W, not an R, you know. So, and,
yeah, well, you know what?
It was great.
We got to think, that's all. Be creative.
yeah, that's what it's basically saying. The cover is basically saying, be creative, think, you know, marketing, you know.
Yeah.
Talk some more about the books, a little bit more.
Well, the book basically covers quite a few really cool things. I found that with the first two books that I had written, I was pretty straightforward. Do this, do that, this is what you need to do next, then you do this, then you do that. And it's scaring a lot of people away because they were like, ah, I don't want to change. You know, please don't make me change. So I realized that when it came to this, I needed to tell authors this story in a different way. I needed to touch them and reach them in a way that's human. So what I did was basically I decided to follow the basic concept of a book that would make you feel good, almost like a little memoir. This is how my life was. You know, I started out as a walking away because my motorcycle neighbor is driving away on his Harley. Okay. Anyways, excuse me.
No problem.
I wanted them to understand that throughout our lives, we're all creative. We all have an art inside of us, and the medium changes. You know, I started out drawing when I was a little girl and painting and then painting on the walls and then doing murals.
Yeah.
And then I went to art school and I got in. Yeah, and just doing that, I wanted people to understand your art will change. You know, right now I'm sitting here and I'm a writer. I'm telling stories, and my art has to roll over into marketing. So when I do that, I wanted to soften all the blows. I wanted it to be a once upon a time. I wanted to be Zen and the marketing author, making friends with the dragon. You know, I wanted to make it lighter, so that they could understand that everything from how you build following to how you connect with them to how you cross-market, you know, every single thing about this process is personal. You're the only one who wrote that book. There's no formula. There's no shortcut. You know, you don't get a one-size-fits-all with this. Your book is unique.
Yeah.
So that's basically what the whole book is about, teaching them how to go back and climb around inside of their own book, reread the thing. How many authors actually reread their books after they actually publish them? Very few.
I do.
You know? Do you? Because a lot of people don't reread their work. After it's done, it's just a product to be sold. So what is it? It's a book, so I'm going to go after all the book people. So if you think about it differently and you read it differently, if there's a dog in your book, there are billions of dog lovers in the world. Why can't you connect with them?
Mm-hmm.
Or cupcake lovers or licorice lovers or whatever. There are at least 30 powerful, unique hooks in your story that are little support elements that you don't even realize are there. So, and I tell authors all the time, you're already a marketing genius. You just don't know it.
Yeah.
You gotta find it.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, yeah. Where can people find your book? Websites or, you know, blog?
Amazon. Amazon.
Amazon.
I know it's in it's on, it's in paper, it's on in Barnes & Noble, so it's paper and Barnes & Noble. It's on Amazon, it's on Nook, it's on Kobo. You know, well, they could go to my website, theauthorsuccesscoach.com, and all the links are there for all of the books, actually.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, so that's where they could find them.
All right,
and,
Deborah,
you know,
Rodden,
when I speak.
Okay. Okay, Deborah Rodden Magus, thanks for being on the show. Thanks for coming back. You've been great.
I get so excited about this subject. I talked all over you. I do apologize. But
No, you've done fine. It was great. I might have stepped all over you or something because you're trying to talk. And one of the things I try to do on this show, when I have an author on this show, I try not to make it an interview. I try to make it a conversation.
Yes. You do a beautiful job with it, too. I really enjoy being on your show.
Thanks a lot. I'll talk to you later.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye. All right, George Wilder Jr. Show on Talk Radio, WTTY. It's 85 degrees. That was Deborah Riley Magnus. This is her second or third time on the show, and she's always great. I'm going to take a break right here. We will be back. Stay with me. Stay with me. Stay with me if I can find something to click. Let me see. Click, click, click. All right. You are now listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio. All right, we're back. We're back broadcasting live from Chicago, WTTTY on Block Talk Radio, George Wilder Jr. Show, 85 degrees in Chicago. And we just got off the line with author and success coach Deborah Riley Magnus. Listen to the show, podcast the show, and find out what she was talking about. And if you're out there, thank you for being there. Thank you for listening. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. All righty. Next week, we should have a guest next week. I'm not sure who that is. I got to look that up. But anyway, it has been great. It has been great. I want to go back over this, what I did yesterday, a dozen ways to help guarantee a successful school year. As we know, school for at least some people in Chicago is going to be starting on September 8th this year. Okay, this is August, and next month is September, so we want to try and get kids prepared to go back to school. Okay, some kids have started school already, but now we want to get people prepared, other kids prepared, so they can go back to school. Talking to the parents of kids, one of the things I want to say about school, we want to try and get the kids to school, all the children, every child who is in public schools, we want to try and get all those kids to school on the first day. That's the most important thing. Get your child out to school on the first day. That is so important because that sets a precedent for the entire year. You get that child to school on the first day, that's going to tell the teachers, the principal, and other administrations and staff that child is going to be at school each and every day. So that is the most important. Get your child out to school. It's important. Education is important more than ever before because these guys are cutting the budget for education. They're cutting the budget for our kids. They're slicing and dicing up schools all over the place. So get your kid out there so they can get there. A lot of parents have taken to educating their own kids. That's fine. That's wonderful. That's beautiful as long as that parent has the skills to do that. Okay? Because you need the skills, and actually all you need is the computer and the internet. But if you want your child to be around other children his or her age, I would suggest you send them out to a school, public or private. It doesn't matter if the school is public or private, they're all in trouble. You know, they're all in trouble. It's financial. And the thing about it, the financial problems of some of these schools, administrations, had nothing to do with that child, had nothing to do with the parents. It has all the earmarks of politicians screwing up and messing up. You know, and then, you know, it on the backs of the kids, on the backs of the poor kids, on the backs of the parents. With all the budget cuts, they are going to be asking the parents to put up some more money, to foot the bill for everything. Yeah, the budget cuts, that means more money is going to come out of the pockets of the parents because of politicians and their mismanagement of everything, even of this state. They can't manage anything. You hire these people, you put them in office, you vote them in office, and they just screw everything up, and then you and I have to pay for it when they're drawing big-time salaries. All right, here we go. A dozen ways to help guarantee a successful school year. All right. Before school begins, set and stick to it an afternoon school routine. This routine should include homework and other activities designed to ease the morning rush. Packing lunches, backpacks, picking out clothes for the next day, and etc. It's rough. if you got kids that are going to school and you're a single parent, you know, that's a lot of work. But it has to be done because you want the best for your child. And your child wants the best for him or herself. Also, you know. All right, attend all conferences, registration meetings, and school functions. In other words, be a part of your child's school. Be a part of it. Schools are always looking for volunteers. They're always looking for help, especially with the budget cuts and the layoffs, and they are in the thousands. The budget cuts and the layoff, then they are in the thousands. Sound like a recording, don't I? Anyway, your attendance at these events helps you to get to know other adults in their students' life. This will also help you to be informed of upcoming events at your child's school or student's school. So when we're talking about getting ready for school, we're talking about everybody, you know, parents, kids, students, teachers. Everybody has to get ready for the coming school year, which is 2015 and 2016, okay? All right, keep accurate records of your communication with the school. It helps to keep a notebook containing meeting dates and people with whom you've spoken. Concerns come up, remember, it isn't documented in writing, it didn't happen. Write everything down, basically, is what it's saying. Write everything down. Don't take an oral handshake or, you know, if you didn't write it down, it's not going to be accepted. Write everything down. If you have a problem, you have a complaint, write it down. Okay, here we go. Observe your student or your child to see how he learns best. Yeah, because a lot of kids learn a lot slower than other children. Everybody learns a little differently. That's no doubt about it. That's common. That's natural. It doesn't mean just because your child learns at a slower pace that something is wrong with your child. It just means that that's how it is. And most teachers will adjust that child to their own particular way of learning, which is a good thing. That's a good thing. Inform your child's background. Share information about your student's background only when it is relevant to your education or her education. Or his education, emotional well-being, and or their safety. All right, homework should be done in one set spot, a set time, and a set purpose. When the expectations for homework are clear, everyone can work together to get it done. And that's what it's all about, is homework. Get it done. Okay. We're talking about a dozen ways to help guarantee a successful school year in the city of Chicago and all over the United States. Okay? Some schools have started up already, especially the suburban schools in the city of Chicago and the state of Illinois. And I'm pretty sure that's some of the same thing that is happening around the United States. So we're talking about now is getting your child ready for a successful school year. We want our children to learn. We want them to be smart. We want them to grow up to be intelligent. We don't want them in gangs and carrying guns and shooting down their neighbors and some stuff like that. We don't want that. We want them to be senators and representatives and maybe even grow up one day to be the president of the United States. We got to give our kids education. The Republicans are education to the bone because they just don't care. We can't allow this to happen. Make sure your child is at school on the very first day, right there in the front entrance, to be the first one in there. And that's going to be so great and so wonderful. Turn off the television and other distractions during homework time. Right, turn off that TV, turn off that computer, turn off that Xbox, PlayStation or whatever you're playing that video on, and get deep down into your homework. Yes, 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 yes. All right. Ongoing encouragement helps students to stay motivated to succeed. Catch students being good. Whenever possible, you say something like, "Wow, I'm really impressed with you. How you've been bringing home your homework each night. Keep up the good work." Always compliment your child if they do something good, if they do something positive. They want to hear that. That will keep them you know, trying to impress you, because that's one of the things kids do. If you show them that that you love them and that you care, they're going to always try to impress you with good grades, being good kids in general, teenagers, good people, you know. You have to show your kid that you love them, you know, and they will try to impress you back. And that's the truth. That is the truth. Show them that you love them and they will impress you back. All right, learn to laugh about your school. Or learn to laugh at your school. Whenever it takes, help your student, your child, enjoy her time at school. Make school fun. Make learning fun. If you make school fun and you make learning fun, the good grades are going to come. You're going to enjoy it. It's going to be a piece of cake. That's a barrier that a lot of kids have. They don't make school fun. And that's why a lot of kids walk around, I hate school. I don't like my teacher. They give me too much homework. Now, that's a child that hates school, that don't want to go to school. That's a child that whenever they walk to school every morning, they wish that that school would burn down before they get there. That's not good. It's going to bring in F's and D's because they hate school. You have to make learning fun. If learning is fun, then you can expect A's and B's from your student. Make learning fun. You know, math can be fun. Geometry can be fun. Geography, chemistry, you know, English, all these classes, physics, these things can be fun. These courses can be fun. A lot of them are pretty tough, pretty rough, pretty hard, but anything can be learned. We just have to make it fun and enjoy it and watch the GPA go up. Grade point average. Go through the roof. Learning has to be fun. You know, I mean, if you got homework, your teacher give you a lot of homework, don't gripe about it. Just get there and do it and get it done. You know, if something is not right, if you don't understand something, you got a math problem that's pretty tough, go to your computer. It's all on your computer. There are so many educational sites and subject sites for high school, grammar school, and high school on the computer. It's a shame. The computer is your teacher. If anything is difficult, history, English, writing, geometry, anything, go to the computer and find the answer. It's right there. Don't fret. I don't want to do this. This is too hard. Then you're going to get a D. You are going to fail. When you're doing your homework, approach it with a positive attitude. Anything can be learned. All you have to do is research, read, and study. Do not make homework hard. Because if you make it hard, it's going to be difficult. You're not going to want to do it. You're going to hate it. Parents, you've got to step in. You know, if you don't know how to help your kid with their homework, go to a computer. Go to the library and find yourself a tutor. Or stay in contact with the school and have the school give you some advice on how you can help your child best succeed in school. It's all there. The help is all there. Because like I just got through saying, education is more important than ever before, because the politicians, the Republicans, the turncoats, the people who pretend as if they're representing us, they're cutting school funding to the bone. And they are not playing. You know, I can thank God that I'm out of school, so I don't have to deal with it. But there's so many people who have to deal with this. And there's so many crime-ridden neighborhoods that I've been being ran by uneducated gangbangers, young gangbangers, because they done dropped out of grammar school. They've dropped, not out of high school, they dropped out of grammar school and carrying guns. If they had any kind of education, any kind of smarts or intelligence, they would have stayed in school and they would not be carrying guns. They'd probably be playing football or basketball someplace, hopefully. So that's my a dozen ways to help guarantee a successful school year. Basically, it's on you. It's on you, the parent. If you're listening to this show and you know, if you're not a parent and you know somebody with some kids, you tell them to download podcasts and listen to this show because it is about the children. It is totally about the kids. I think I did a show yesterday talking on the same subject of this because it was the main topic of the show yesterday. But still in all, I mean, until school actually starts back, I'm going to be talking about this. A dozen ways to help guarantee a successful school year. And like I said at the top, one of the greatest ways, the best ways, the most unique ways a child can have a successful school year is to be there on the first day. Not the second day, the third day, but the first day when those doors open. On the first day. All right, this is George Wilder Jr., the George Wilder Jr. Show, broadcasting live from Chicago. Thank you very much to Deborah Riley Magnus for being on the George Wilder Jr. Show today. She was great. She was talking about her book, Left Brain, Right Brain, Left Brain, okay? All right, do I have a brain? Okay, it's a motivational factor about the marketing ups and downs for would-be writers or, you know, current writers or veteran writers and authors. You know, it's a great book if you want to be a writer and you want to learn how to, like she said, market your book, publicity, advertising, things like that, word of mouth and stuff like that. So listen to the show. Go back and podcast the show and listen to the show. And I'm pretty sure you'll learn something. I sure did. Okay. All right. This is George Wilder Jr., George Wilder Jr. Show, 347-857-1762. I will be right back. Let me see if I can work my books here. There we go. All right, you're back here on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Thank you for hanging in there. Thank you for staying. Thank you for listening. Thank you to my guest for today. Okay, this is George Wilder Jr. Show, broadcasting live from Chicago. And we were just talking about a dozen ways to help guarantee a successful school year. Okay, I'm going to go out with this particular song, and I want you to listen to it. And tell me what you think. All right, here it is. All right. Crank it up. Open eyes.
that we may see. To follow thee, Lord, grant us
was Open Our Eyes by the Gospel Clef. I clipped that off of YouTube. All right, this is the George Wilder Jr. of the George Wilder Jr. Show, broadcasting live from Chicago. Someone just whispered in my ear and said 90 seconds. Okay, what can we do in 90 seconds? We can probably just say, hey, goodbye, see you tomorrow. Glad, thank you for listening. And it's great. It's been great, and I say this again, it's been a wonderful day, it's been a wonderful time. Thank you for listening, thank you for downloading, thank you for podcasting, thank you for all the nice things that you've said about this show, and some of the things you've said about me, and you know, this is just wonderful, it's just wonderful, and tomorrow I'll be talking about 100 ways to live to be 100. You know, if you want to find out how to live to be 100, tune in tomorrow. You know, it's going to be here. We're going to be here. We have nothing else to do. So we're going to be here talking about 100 ways to live to be 100. I know there's another topic that's going to be on the screen, you know, but still I'm going to incorporate 100 ways to live to be 100 on whatever topic that might be there for tomorrow's show. I'm still going to incorporate this because I think this is great. This is wonderful. To live longer. We all know that women live longer than men. But, however, this 100 ways to live to be 100 doesn't discriminate. All right, this is George Wilder Jr. of the George Wilder Jr. Show. We're off the air just about. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much.